Hey everyone, before we begin today's podcast, I want to tell you about our amazing sponsor, Hooligan Fuel Hot Sauce. Honestly, one of the best sauces I've ever had. They have a wide variety of flavors and they are available for absolutely every occasion. Hell, I love them so much, we teamed up and created Tim Albertson Private Reserve Tangy Whiskey Honey Heat. There are so many options available and even more coming every day. So go check them out at www.hooligan, that's H-O-O-L-I-G-A-N, fuel.com.
Hey, what's going on? This is David Boy James.
Hey, this is Scott Owen.
Hi, this is Deborah Lynn.
We're Rosewood Avenue.
Hey, everybody, this is Cadu.
This is Haley Verrill.
This is Mary Ray Knapp, godmother of Canadian country music. And you are listening to the Canadian Country Music Podcast with Tim Albertson.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to a brand new season of the Canadian Country Music Podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 1. I am your host, Tim Albertson, a Canadian country music artist and lover who has been infatuated with every aspect of the Canadian country music world. The ins, the outs, the moments behind the stage, the songs, the business, and of course, share these stories with our fans. On today's podcast, we have my incredible guest from Athens, Ontario, Miss Mary Ray Knapp. However, you probably know her best as the godmother of Canadian country music. She has a new book out called Memoirs of the Godmother Canadian Country Music, Johnny Reed Changed My Life, which is available on Amazon today. We will talk about that today, as well as introduce you to my very good friend, Mary Ray. Thank you so much for coming on today. How are you?
Well, I'm wonderful. And thank you very much for the invitation, Tim.
As I've said multiple times on this podcast before, when I first brought this podcast out, I had a list in my head of people who I wanted on this podcast and your name was on there. So thank you very much for starting. And this is the beginning of season two for me now. So we're starting it off big.
So you have all the bugs out.
I wouldn't say that, but there's probably definitely going to be a lot of bugs in here with, you know, technology these days, but that's all right. We roll with the punches. That's how we do it as musicians.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Mary Ray, you have been a pioneer of Canadian country music scene. You've toured with the likes of Johnny Reed and Brett Kissel. But before all that, let's start off at the beginning. Where did Mary Ray's story begin?
Well, as you said, I'm from Athens, which is in Eastern Ontario. And my family was not musical, but we heard country on the radio. We watched Don Messer on TV, and we had albums of Harry Belafonte, who was actually my first concert, Dean Martin, and Elvis. And then as a teen in the 60s, I listened to the British Invasion, of course, and rock and roll. But I also wore out our Tammy Wynette 8-track tape.
Ooh.
So I have a pretty diverse background.
Absolutely. So when did your country music peek into the radar then?
Well, I would say country became my favorite genre as a late teen. My husband and I attended a dance almost every weekend, and we listened only to country radio after that.
Oh, okay. So at what point did your passion for music inspire you to pursue it further? Because at first it was just like a love affair with it music wise, but then all of a sudden the godmother Canadian country music's persona came around. So what point did that go from passion to actually pursuing it career wise?
Well, I would say it wasn't until my mid-30s that we actually started traveling to Nashville, which would give anybody the bug.
especially in that time frame too.
Yeah, it was wonderful. We attended Fanfare, it was called then. It's now CMA Fest, when a lot of really iconic musicians were at their top. I mean, George Jones was there, for goodness sakes, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And then we attended outdoor country festivals in Ontario and some concerts. But I never thought then even that 30 years later, I would have a place in the Canadian country music family. First of all, as the chair of the Joshua Bates Center Performing Arts Committee,
mm-hmm.
because I did start to attend the CCMA week in that capacity. And that's, of course, once you've been to one of those and you're just introduced to so many wonderful Canadian country artists,
I really
got the bug then.
Now, at what point or what capacity would you, being the chairman, bring you into that scene? What would your role have been at that time?
Well, I was on the hunt for people that could perform in Athens. And it was through those connections that Brett Kissel came, Wendell Ferguson. I'm trying to think who else came specifically because of that. Anyway, there was a lot of entertainers that I met there, some of whom ended up coming to Joshua Bates. And I'm still there, actually, under that capacity. But now I've kind of added Godmother of Canadian Country Music as my second hat when I'm at CCMA week. I'm kind of there as a double persona now.
Well, you're there for Joshua Bates, but you're also there for yourself. So it must be amazing.
It is. And I know for years people thought I was just there because I supported Johnny Reed. But really, that's not what it said on my name tag. It said Joshua Bates Center on my name tag.
How big would the Joshua Bates Center be?
Maximum fire capacity is 240 people. Okay. And that includes whoever's on the band and behind the soundboard, etc.
Oh, okay.
So it's a very small, intimate theater. Mm. It's got near perfect acoustics. Every performer who's ever been there has asked to come back or has come back. Certainly they all say what great acoustics they are and what a receptive audience it is.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because it's a true listening room.
Yeah, I'm picturing it in my head right now, and I can see it as more like you can almost record from the floor right there with how good it is.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Wayne Rostad did record a DVD from there.
Oh.
Yeah. We'd like to do more of that. But I actually thought about doing a live there, but internet's not good enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
You need a pretty good internet to be able to not go choppy or break mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. So
again, technology, see?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
But yeah. So in your book, which we'll get into further shortly, you talk about some of the artists you've had the pleasure to work with, one being the incredible Johnny Reed. As a matter of fact, that friendship then transpired you to begin his fan base, the Tartan Army. Where and when did this friendship first begin?
Well, we met Johnny Reed in February of 2000 when he played in Athens at the Joshua Bates Center.
Well, there you go. Was that a show that you had personally put together, or was that just one that he was playing?
No, it was myself and two other women who brought it to our committee, because we're a committee that makes all the decisions. And the three of us brought it to the committee and they said, run with it. So it was partly because of me, partly because of Deb and Elaine Yusupovich that he came to Athens.
And at that time, like, Johnny's already making a name for himself, correct?
Well, not really. No, he was just out of university, he had one album that he had out in university, like near the end, mm-hmm. and he was starting to try to get his first self-titled album out, the one that was going to go to radio. Okay. And so we were part of the tour that he did that summer. Well, not summer, we were in February, but it started in the winter, went through the summer to promote that self-titled CD.
And so, like, from you seeing him at the Joshua Bates Center, was it just that moment where you're like, I really want to help you out in any way possible that I can?
Yes. That was quick, wasn't it? Yes.
Yep.
We were immediately drawn to that talented, personable young man who's actually my children's age.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. And I joke now because I say that I used to say it was like my son had a band mm-hmm. when I was with Johnny. And now that I know Brett, it's almost like my grandson has a band. I mean, he's only 3 years older than my oldest grandchild. So
Fair enough. Fair enough. How long were you like side by side with Johnny?
Well, we met in February of 2000, and then that year, we all, there was a group of us, and we went everywhere. I mean, he was playing the fairs and the bars and, you know, all that kind of jazz, and maybe some outdoor concerts and some festivals. And well, not festivals as much as fairs, I would say.
Fair enough.
And a whole bunch of us went all over Ontario for that.
Was that mainly provincial, or was that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That was provincial. He did some shows in Quebec because he went to university at Bishop's in the Eastern Townships. So there was a, you know, fan base there as well, of course. But no, it was primarily Ontario. And, you know, to be honest, it was hard slogging to get people to see the vision that we saw. Mm-hmm. You know, I can really appreciate someone who's trying to promote a new artist and how very difficult it is.
Oh, especially these days. Like back then, if you weren't on the radio, you weren't anybody. And now, now it's gotten even worse.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because I was a promoter in Thunder Bay back when I was 18, which is only like 3 years ago.
Feels like it.
Feels like it, in one aspect, it feels like 3 years ago. In another aspect, it feels like a completely different lifetime ago. But yeah, so it was the same way when I would bring bands here. Like in my head, I'd listen to the music and I'd be like, well, obviously, yeah, the music's absolutely phenomenal. But if you weren't being played on the radio, nobody was going to come see you. It wasn't the concept that they wanted to find new music. They just wanted to stick with the stuff that they had already known.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that was why it was hard for me to convince Brett Kissel's then manager to let him play in Athens. Actually, Brett, yes, Brett was the big one that I found at CCMA's, discovered there sort of thing. But it took me a couple of years working on his manager to allow him to come to Athens because he had no radio airplay in Ontario.
Huh.
So, being a good manager, he didn't want to put his artist into a venue where and have nobody show up.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see where that's coming.
Yeah, but I promised, I said, we have a series. We have a series ticket holders. So we have a good base of people that show up regardless.
Yeah.
And then I said, all I'm going to have to say is he's country and you're going to feel with him like you did with Johnny. I saw him win.
Yeah.
And I've got some creds here in the village now because we did recognize Johnny and get behind him. And of course, look at the heights he went to.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that if I said that Brett was going to do the same thing, that they better come out and see him.
Well, now I really hope I can get to Athens so you can say the same thing about me.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? If we ever get this pandemic over and we get the shows that we've had booked for 2 years to actually get on the stage,
yeah,
then I can start thinking about other people.
I hear you. There are shows that I am penciled in on that I'm just kind of waiting on a shoestring right now.
Yeah.
Is it going to happen or not?
Yeah, is it or isn't it? We were supposed to have the Abrams on January 7th and... You know, we not pulled the plug, but we postponed.
Yeah.
Maybe 2.5 weeks ago. And I'm so glad we did because then we got all of the paperwork and the advertising work, et cetera, done to say it was postponed because our government didn't, as you know, say no concerts until just maybe a couple days before January 7th.
Yeah.
So if we had waited for that, we would have been, you know, peddling to try to get things all done before the 2 days were up. So
easily.
We don't know when it's going to be rescheduled. We're just waiting.
When you're rescheduling these shows, do you find that the artists are quite like understandable and easy to reschedule, or have you had to completely cancel shows as well?
We canceled one in March of 2020. And the one that was supposed to come in April of 2020, we rebooked him twice more.
Okay.
And finally, yeah. And then finally we just like, between him and me, said, all right, no, enough is enough. But we are having that same singer come next year, but with a different band. So, But the other ones that we had, there was one group we were doing a local variety show, all singers, but four different artists. And we just couldn't fit it in because we were trying to get some of these other postponed ones in as well. And we only do three or four, generally about four shows a season from like October to April.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a big season. So it was kind of hard to fit them in. However, we are working with them. Hopefully they're going to be here next year. But the other artists, well, like the Abrams, for instance, you know, their booking agent was fine. You just tell us when we can have them, and which is January 7th, because they were supposed to be last year in January.
Oh, wow.
They were, yeah. So they've been postponed once, and they'll be postponed again.
A full 365 days.
Yep. So we shall see what happens. But to answer your question, they've all been really good about rebooking. We're having a local group called Helion Ore. They were quick to postpone and reschedule. Mm-hmm. And then we have another singer who I will mention later, who we rescheduled, and she's coming in April. So
awesome.
Yeah. But no, they've been very good because, well, their calendars aren't full either.
Well, yeah, exactly. They're exactly on hold, exactly like yours.
Exactly.
So back to Johnny here. What's one of the most memorable moments you can recall from being on the road with Johnny?
Well, this one isn't. He was on the road. I wasn't.
Okay.
He was on tour in 2007 with his Kicking Stones CD tour, and Athens was a stop on that tour. So we brought him, but he and his wife and his two oldest boys, who were just little kids at the time, came out to our house and spent the afternoon at our farm.
Ooh.
And it was just fun. You know, it was just so nice to none of us had to work at the venue. There were other people that stayed behind, did the sound check, got everything set up, was there to man the ticket booth when that opened. Mm-hmm. And we just got to come out and hang out on our farm and go ride around on the side by side and just let the kids play with my toys. And it was really a lovely, lovely afternoon.
That's awesome. Was that the first time you had like this personal kind of one-on-one with him?
Oh, no, no. No, because this was in 2007, and we had gotten to know each other in 2000. So there'd been many times, and I had toured out west with them. I did a 5-day in 2007. And then I also did some in 2005, I think it was, out west. Okay. So, yeah. And just, you know, I've been to his parents' house and he'd been here different times. And
fair enough. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Like we're friends.
I'm not jealous at all.
Well, in fact, on the back of the book, one of the forewords is from him, and it says, "I've heard it said the most important relationship in the music business is the relationship between the artist and the fan."
Yeah.
I've always disliked the word fan. I much prefer the word friend.
I read that and that makes 100% sense. And to that point where now it's literally like when I'm talking to, I'm using air quotes right now, but when I'm talking to my fans, I literally like the fan word is out the door now. It's 100% friendship and it has to be that way.
Yeah, country music has they have very loyal fans. And they'll stick by you. You might have not had a hit out in 20 years.
Yeah, or you might do something that is not 100% the right thing to do.
Yeah. But, then like, they forgive you.
Yeah. They're also there to say, hey, guess what? You screwed up. And we'll be here as long as you need us.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the aspect where I'm like, okay, this is 100% a friendship, or even closer to a family.
Yeah, some of them are like family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've certainly become like that. You know, he knows of all my grandchildren, and you know.
Are any of them named after him?
No.
Okay.
No.
Are any of his kids named after you?
No.
Rude.
That's rude. One of us should have got on that, shouldn't right. we? Actually, in your own, the thought never crossed my mind.
How rude. So, Mary Ray, when did you find the persona of the godmother of country music? When did all this transpire?
Well, I had been promoting country music for couple 20 some years probably, and I was filling up my Facebook with, you know, there was more things about artists and who you should go and see and that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
than my own exploits as a person. So I met Eric Dillon, who is a singer-songwriter from Nashville. He's from Kansas originally.
Okay,
and I met him. He was doing a couple shows up here in Ontario, and I was introduced to him, and we had a long conversation. And then when I saw him in 2018 at CCMA week, he is the lead singer for Black Mountain Whiskey Rebellion,
mm-hmm.
which are on the MDM recording label. And he said to me, do you know what I call you? I'm thinking, why would any Nashville singer-songwriter call me anything, really, other than Mary Ray?
Yeah.
And I, you know, like, I couldn't imagine he'd even think of giving me a name. And I said, no, what do you call me? He said, I call you the godmother of Canadian country music. Because he said, when I read your posts, you're always talking about artists you like. And he said, and I go and look them up. Because, as you know, Tim, the artists are paired up with different professional songwriters,
mm-hmm.
to write the songs for their albums. And so he said, then when I'm asked to write for some or with some Canadian artists, lots of times I've heard of them because of you.
Fair enough. Yeah. 100%.
You could have bowled me over when he said it.
Yeah.
Wow. And then I had a few artists, actually, once they found out I had started Johnny Reed's Tartan Army fan club, mm-hmm. I had several of them say, would you start a fan club for me?
Oh, or absolutely.
Would you run a fan page for me? Because that's kind of what's going on now, too. And I struggled because, I mean, my experience was 15 years ago. And I mean, MySpace was just happening. There was, you know.
Yeah, like I remember that time.
No social media at all other than MySpace.
No, the Facebook was not around yet.
No. And I just thought, I know how to run a fan club in the old way,
yeah.
obviously, because we did very well with it. But I really wasn't quite sure how to do it in today with social media. And I also wondered how relevant it would be, mm-hmm. when the artists themselves can go on and talk directly to their fans just on their Instagram and Facebook. So I kind of just said, well, one artist, I actually went a little ways with it. And then we just decided, you know, I think how I can help more people is to start a social media presence of the godmother. And that way I can help whoever I want. I can talk about whoever I want. I can share whatever stories I have that I, you know, feel like sharing. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to worry about how this sounds terrible, but it's not the weight on my shoulders of how well that artist does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, fair enough. What makes 100% fact right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were to do their fan base, it would end up being, if it was to fail, then it's failing because of you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So.
That's
how that came about.
Well, okay. Well, can we break down the Tartan Army for a second?
Sure.
So you were just talking about how you did it back in the old days. So old days, are we talking about we have a website for his fan base? And that's about it?
We didn't have that even in the beginning.
All right. So where are we going back with this?
In 2004, I started, and the launch was in 2005.
Okay. So are you getting them at their shows or?
Yes. Yes. So what would any emails? What happened was his business partner gave me a list of emails that they had gathered over the past 5 years of him touring across Canada, going to all the bars and radio stations and, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And they had gathered that. So he gave me that. And my first task was to send an email out to all of them to let them know that Johnny would soon be back touring in Canada again.
Okay.
And these are the places you could see him. And if you don't want to be on this list anymore, of course, unsubscribe. And then so we cleaned the list up between people who wanted to unsubscribe, although there weren't many of them, and ones whose the email just wasn't active anymore. Mm-hmm. And then it went from there to I had a clean database, plus I added some as I went along to keep those people up to date. So then when we did the launch of the Tartan Army, which was in Athens, by the way, that was pretty neat. I just started going to all the shows with the fan kits there, and I could just sign people up. They paid their money and got their fan kit. Like they got a bag, a cloth bag, with pictures and autographs and dog tags and all kinds of stuff in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and a year's membership.
And then the people that are going to the shows are ready to spend money for merch. So like, why not, right?
Well, exactly. And so then we had contests, you know, whoever signed up the most people got dinner for two with Johnny. And I had contests. I would gather up things that I thought that the fans would be interested in, had him sign a bunch of stuff. And then I had contests. And then we got part of that time. We did get a website, but it was like a front page. And I worked with the webmaster on that to tell them where Johnny was going to be and if there was any other news. And and then the people that joined the fan club, of course, I had their emails. So they would get a newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
But get this, if you didn't have email, you still could join. Give me your snail mail and I snail mailed you.
Oh, that's devotion, Mary Ray.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't want people to not be able to support him.
Yeah.
Just because they didn't have an email. And a lot of people, you know, didn't
have
it. Then.
Yeah. There's still people that I know today that still don't have one.
Yeah. I don't really know too many, but I do.
It's fading, but I still got a couple.
Yeah. There's two people still on our committee that don't have, like on our Joshua Bates committee that don't. And I think we have one member and I'm in my women's group that I belong to that doesn't have one. So yeah, there are still a few, but yeah, people couldn't believe it
when
I told them that I snail mailed them out to people.
That's amazing.
But as you say, at the shows, we sold, even though we were fan club people, myself and Karen Burns and Elaine Yusufovich, we still sold his merch too. Mm-hmm. Like we sold the CDs and the t-shirts and I sold the fan clubs memberships. So yeah, it was word of mouth and shows.
And
yeah.
Like how many people would you say that you had on that list?
Well, I would say after the first 8 or 9 months, we had 300 people. And then once they got a better website and once he got a management company, because he didn't have a management company. He had his business partner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like he had a business partner who was his best friend. And so between the two of them promoting and me pushing the fan club, eventually he got an actual management company, and they took the fan club in-house.
Okay.
So that's when it really grew more then, because then they got a real active website and a Tartan Army section where you had to belong to the Tartan Army to be able to go into that section.
Exclusivity.
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. And contests again for them. And then there was, well, as things got more and more people belonged, then you had to be a Tartan Army member to be able to go to a meet and greet.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like you weren't going to get access if you weren't a member, mm-hmm. because there was, by that time he was playing such big shows that, you know, he just couldn't sit and sign all night long.
No, sadly, so, he has to be on the road and back off to the next show. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like in the early years, you know, he sat at the autograph table for hours afterwards. Mm-hmm. But later on, it was just, as you say, too much traveling and too many people. So really the only ones that got to meet him would be the fan club or maybe some, you know, radio contest winners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you say that it kind of transpired to the point like with social media. So I'm guessing that you're stating that it's like more, the artist himself has a lot more, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Has more ability to kind of host it himself and be able to interact with all these people on a daily basis, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can. And I mean, Brett Kissel's phenomenal with that.
That he is.
He's kind of the king of it. That's why he's won Fans Choice so many times. Mm-hmm. Although Johnny won Fans Choice, I don't know, 6-7 times. He won it 1 year when he didn't even have an album out.
He did. It was, you know what? I think it's his looks. He's just got that look to him.
Nothing to do with how well he sings.
Well, he's also, don't get me wrong, he's phenomenal too. But like when he steps up on stage, you're just like, your breath gets taken away first off.
Yeah.
And then he starts singing and who doesn't?
And like, then you have no breath left at all.
Exactly, right?
Right?
Like what's the, it's not fair, Mary, right?
Some people have it all, right?
Right.
And he's so nice. Like I've had so many people say to me, is he really as nice a person in person, like in reality, as he comes across, you know, on stage or at shows or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, what you see is what you get. Like, that's him.
It was. I got a chance to meet him when I was younger. He was on the CP or CN holiday train.
Oh, yeah, CP.
Okay, yeah. So I think it was like the first time he's on there. And I think Terry Clark might have been on there too, or maybe I'm mixing up the years, but he was playing, and afterwards we got a slight like 20-minute brief chance to sit there and chat with him. And because I was the country guy and everybody else around me didn't really know a whole bunch of it, and I think Johnny was just kind of making his way up the ladder in country music at that time, I just ran to him because I was drawn to him. And I think I sat there for about 15 or 20 minutes just chit-chatting with him. And yeah, even then he was just humble, kind. There was kids around him. He was having a blast. Like, yeah, him and Brett, I can feel the two pinnacles are also two of the nicest guys in the world. So.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I feel so honored to call them both friends.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay, so you've been interviewing artists for quite a while. Now you will go from independence and you also talk with prominent artists such as Johnny and Brett, like we were just discussing. What was your favorite interview that you've ever done?
Well, Johnny's would be my favorite because, you know, it was really just two friends catching up. Mm-hmm. And that one was in 2015. But more recently, I enjoyed meeting you and the others at Soundcheck Entertainment's 10th anniversary.
That was
a fun weekend all the way around. And I just wish that I had had more time to speak to some of the artists. Some of them I only got a few minutes because, as you knew, I was emceeing and stage managing that event as well. So, and we had two stages.
Yes, so, you had so many hats on that weekend. It was ridiculous.
So I'm just trying to, you know, introduce the person up at the top stage and see them, because, mm-hmm. you know, I hadn't seen a lot of these artists before, and then get back downstage to the other one and introduce, and hopefully somewhere in between catch up with all of the artists so that I could at least have a little bit of a chat with them.
I felt exhausted from running around to see the artists. I can't even imagine how exhausted you were having to work there.
But it was fun. I loved it.
Is there any artist that you like you're dying to interview?
Well, this is a pie in the sky and it's never going to happen, but I would just think I'd died and gone to heaven if I could sit down and interview Loretta Lynn.
Oh, well, as you know, Loretta is a huge follower of this podcast. So,
well, there you go. Maybe she heard it. Yeah, there's actually a chapter in my book about her. So yeah, that would be pie in the sky. Probably maybe in Canada, maybe it would be Paul Branch.
Oh yeah, small towns, big dreams.
Yeah, I met him once, just at a reception at the CCMAs. And he was just so down to earth and genuine and interested in what my girlfriend and I had to say too. You know, it was mm-hmm. a conversation that we had with him. But yeah, I think he would be a good interview.
Oh, he would. I can see that one being amazing, especially like even now, like in his more prominent years, like he has so much knowledge that he can just blast out to everybody.
Oh yeah. I'd have to do a lot of research before I even started the interview, because I want to do him justice.
Right. Those are the ones where you're sitting up day and night, like, okay, watch this interview, watch this interview, watch this interview, watch this interview.
Well, actually, you know, my interviewing started because of Hendrik Pape of Soundcheck Entertainment.
Oh, shout out Soundcheck.
Yeah. He asked me to interview on his behalf. He would see on my Facebook or wherever, maybe personally, that I was going to be at such and such a concert or show. And he would say, well, I can't be there, but I would really, if I set up this interview, will you do it?
Wicked.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I did a few of them that way. And then, of course, then he said to me, do you think you could set one up with Johnny? I'm like, well, we've never had an interview together, but I can sure try. So, I reached out to him and he said, sure, that would be different. We've had lots of conversations, but none of them recorded before.
Yeah. That's like,
yeah. Yeah. Hendrik also started me on doing reviews. Cause I attended a Tim Hicks New Year's Eve show in, outside in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. It was very cold, I'll tell you. But anyway, I had taken some pictures, done a short little blurb for my Facebook page, and this was just me, you know, my personal one. Mm-hmm. And he reached out and said, oh, would you like to do a review for Soundcheck? I'm like, well, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a writer. And he writes well, you know. Hendrik writes well. So, and I didn't take any notes. So I thought, oh, well, I said, I can try. So I did it. And he tweaked a couple things, not much. And that was the beginning of me doing reviews. Mm-hmm. And just because of him, I do interviews. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, last year, I had a webmaster design my own website.
Mm-hmm. Which is beautiful, by the way.
Yeah, she's very professional. Mm-hmm. So that's where my interviews are now. And I've included all the, well, not all the ones I ever did, but since 2015.
And as a matter of fact, it is alphabetically done. So if you go to it, Tim Albertson's number one on there.
There you go. So there's two ways of searching it. You can go to artists, and then as you say, click on the name and it'll take you over to to them, or you can go to the interviews, and then it's done in date order.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Fair enough.
Yep. Two different ways you can get there.
Yeah, you just did Jeff Caddo the other day, correct?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Well, talk about visiting. I mean, we didn't know each other at all. And we managed to talk for almost 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Jeff is an easy person to get lost with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had a very in-depth conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I told him, I said, I don't want to, like, I'm not Barbara Walters. I don't want anybody I interview to bear something they don't want to bear. I don't want them to cry, you know? I just want to have my listeners get to know more about that person and their background.
Yeah.
And to help promote them. That's kind of how, you know, and the same with my book. There are no bad stories, you know, like there's no negativity. There was one person I mentioned who I don't mention by name that I don't have very kind things to say about, but but other than that, no. And it's because my history with these people is all positive. You know, like country music family in Canada are very supportive of each other.
It really is. Like I preach it nonstop on this podcast. It's very much a family driven thing. It's not one person trying to reach over top of the other. It's literally taking hands and reaching all at the very same speed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I was going to read, since I'm in the still looking at my book here, what Brett wrote for his foreword.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he says, Mary Ray, I'm honored to have been included in your book. I thoroughly enjoyed the trip down memory lane. And I want to congratulate you on your incredibly creative project. I know many people in our Canadian country music family will love your stories.
Oh.
And you think my heartstrings weren't tugged when he sent me that one.
Right.
I'm like, oh, Brett.
Oh, my grandson.
Yeah. I love you too.
Okay, well, let's talk about this book, Memoirs of the Godmother of Canadian Country Music, Johnny Reed Changed My Life. It's just under 800 pages. It's packed with knowledge from decades of memories. What inspired you to begin writing this book, or has it been a long time coming for you?
It was the Tartan Army, the early Tartan Army members, like those first 300 people who just kept telling me, you should write a book. You should write a book, because when we would get together, of course, they want to hear the stories, right?
Yeah.
They want to know more about Johnny. They want to hear the road stories, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I just never thought I had a book in me. You know, it's a big project.
Oh, absolutely.
But it wasn't until later years when, again, I'm still telling my stories, and people who were not in the Tartan Army, people who were not big Johnny Reed fans. I mean, everybody that likes country music likes Johnny, but, you know, like really diehard fans who said the same thing to me. And so I thought, maybe more than these 300 people might be interested, you know? So then when we went to our stay at home order on December 26, 2020, the time just gets all screwed up with this darn pandemic. I never know what year I'm even in, but anyway, that year, December 26, we were stay at home.
Yeah.
And I live alone. My husband passed 11 years ago. So I'm here by myself in the middle of the winter. I've cleaned every cupboard, closet, painted everything that needed painting, and read lots of books. And I'm thinking, well, now what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I thought, well, you know what? Let's bite the bullet and start writing this book.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, but, you know, one lady that bought it from me said, you must have kept a journal. And I said, well, I didn't keep a journal per se, but I had scrapbooks.
Okay.
So I mentioned Loretta Lynn. There's another chapter on Terry Sumption, who was an Ontario performer. Both of them, I had scrapbooks on from having been to shows and so forth. I had scrapbooks on going to fanfare in Nashville. And then once Johnny came in my life, I had 10 years of scrapbooks with him. And then I said to him, okay, I've done it for 10 years. I'm not doing it anymore. Because by then he was just everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't keep up with everything that was happening. And he had a whole machine behind him. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if they want to keep track of that stuff, they can do it. I've done my bit now.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I didn't keep one of Brett's. However, his memories were a little newer, you know, they were a little more up in my brain. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I gathered information was I had kept a Christmas letter that I sent out to my friends with my Christmas card every year since, I think, 1984.
Oh, wow.
And so I got the years out that I was writing about in the book. And I just read over that too, because of course I always mention going to see these different artists or my different trips that I took. So that helped once his scrapbooks were done. Because I could look at those and say, oh yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the year that we did this show or that trip. And there was one though that said that I went up to Toronto for a show with my friends, Bob and Karen. And I thought, I don't even remember that. So I called her and I said, well, what were we doing that particular time? And then she refreshed my memory and she sent me a couple pictures actually. I'm like, oh yeah, now I remember that. But that is the only one. That is the only one that I really didn't remember.
Wow. Eh?
It was a TV taping for CMT, but I'd been to several of those.
Fair enough. So they just got scrambled up and all jumbled up together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, and I found the process. I thought, you know, even if this book never gets published, I found the process a lot of fun. For one thing, I was doing this trip down memory lane. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel so confined in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was being transported back to all of those fun times. But I also reached out to people because if I wanted to quote them, you need somebody's permission to quote them word for word.
Mm-hmm.
So I would send what I was planning on quoting to these people. And some of them I hadn't heard from or I hadn't been in touch with in years. One was Johnny's first manager that he had out of Nashville.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, like, and we're going back. I probably hadn't talked to him since 2005.
Oh, gee. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, a lot of my friends, and some of them I'd say, now, if you have any pictures of this particular event, more so than what I have, you know, if you want to share them, send them over. So I did that too. And then there were a few I reached out to for photos permission. Because they were taken in a private setting.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, like, I reached out to Johnny and Jen because I have some pictures of their children when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
No worries.
I have a scratchy throat here.
Robitussin.
So anyway, I'd reached out to Johnny and Jen because I had pictures of their children when they were really young. And I thought, I don't want to put them in a book if they don't want them in there.
Mm-hmm.
But they both were like, yeah, they're great. No problem.
Yeah, they're good pictures of them. They look pretty good.
Oh, so you've actually read the book or seen the pictures, through it?
I've seen the pictures. I have it on Kindle. I have it on my Kindle. I am waiting. I have a royalty check coming in the next couple of days. And the very first thing that I'm buying on it is the actual paperback.
Well, thank you for that. I have to say, though, the pictures in the paperback are black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kindle pictures are in color, correct?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, yeah. And that was my preferred way. I have to tell you, we got we ended up I'll just backtrack a little bit. So I got it all written. I managed to wade through
it.
How long did it take you?
I
got it all written.
How long did that
take? Well, it only took me 5 months to write it.
Okay.
But then I had a professional editor who was actually laid up with the, I don't know, broken leg or something. So she did it while she was off. But it took all summer to do. So we didn't get kind of the final draft of it until into October. But she did a great job. I'm glad, you know, that I did go that route. And then I chose to put it up on Amazon. I did speak to an actual publishing company, but ended up choosing Amazon. And then my grandson actually did all of the technical work and the formatting work and the putting the pictures in and so forth. Like, I chose them all, but he inserted them all and so forth. And we got that all done. You go to the very bottom and you click on how much they're going to have to charge for the book. $110 with the color pictures. I just about cried, Tim.
No,
because like nobody's going to pay $110.
Yeah. Like,
so I'm like, well, now what do I do? And he said, well, probably the black and white would be cheaper. And of course, me not being like, I'm pretty technical for a person my age, I think, but I wasn't really too terribly technical when it came to getting this book formatted. I had visions of having to back all the pictures out and convert them to black and white and reinsert them. It's what was going through my mind.
And
I was just like, oh my God, this will never be ready for Christmas, because I really wanted it so that if anybody wanted to buy it for Christmas, that it would be ready. Anyway, all he did was click a button that switched from color to black and white, and away you went. And then it got the book down to $29.50, like in a matter of 4 minutes, and it was all done. And I'm like, oh my goodness. But as I say, I was disappointed that they weren't in color. But people that have looked at them say, well, they're fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. So anyway, that's what they are.
Well, I don't want to spoil the book for anyone, myself included, when it comes in. But looking through the chapter names, such as CCMA Weeks, chapters on Johnny Reed and Brett Kissel, festivals of small halls and CMAO, there is one I was hoping to get a little sneak peek into, which was stories of other artists. Can you give just a small excerpt from this chapter? Like, what kind of stories can we expect?
Well, I'll read you one from about Naomi Bristow.
Okay.
So it says, Naomi Bristow, now in her 20s, is a classic country singer and yodeler from Western Ontario, who has been recording since she was a child. Vince Gill, Bill Anderson, and Jim Ed Brown have sung duets on her records. She has a loyal American following and has won awards there. We first saw her at Manitoulin Country Fest. Not long afterwards, I noticed a brown envelope with her name and address on it, sitting on the table in our church hall. Our secretary had picked up the mail and put it there to be passed on to the appropriate person. I figured I was the appropriate person, since I was the only one in the church that knew who Naomi was, so I opened it. Naomi wanted to play in our church. I spoke to the council about her request and described the concert that I had seen and how well it was received. I told them that I felt she would be a great fit for our church. We hold 2 concerts a year, and most often they are not gospel, but rather country or pop. The council respected my opinion, and 15-year-old Naomi came to sing. She was such a hit that we had her back 2 more times. I would get stopped on the street with people asking, when are you bringing Naomi back? Kiernan and I went to the Piggery in 2018 to see her because I had recommended her to my friends there. In 2019, Naomi toured with the Scott Woods Show, which included the guitarist extraordinaire Steve Petico, who was inducted into the Ottawa Valley Country Music Hall of Fame in 2009. We caught the show at a stop not far from us. This was the first time I had met Steve, and I was a bit tongue-tied, believe it or not. Naomi is currently booked for our Joshua Bates Center series in the spring of 2022. Let's hope that happens. In the meantime, please check out her website to read more about this incredible young woman.
Oh, that's perfect. So there is the female that is being announced for the Joshua Bates Center.
Correct. Ah. And that's why, so that's not what, that's why I didn't mention her name before, because I had chosen that segment to read.
Fair enough. Oh, Mary Ray, that's so beautiful. I love that. Like that, that's, it's like a promo and a love story all wrapped into one little excerpt.
Well, and that's what the book is. The love story, of course, being with Johnny and Brett, mm-hmm. but a lot of the other artists, it's promo, but it's also acknowledge the caliber of country music that we have here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's why I mentioned about Steve being inducted into the Hall of Fame and different times, especially CCMA week chapters. I mentioned the different artists and say what accolades are. And I do apologize right in the beginning of the book if I don't mention somebody that I've seen, or if I don't, you know, because I mean, I've seen so many of them, and I don't say the accolades of every single one I've seen either, or this book wouldn't have been 765 pages. It would have been like 2,000. Yeah, I'd still be writing it, is right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at the same time, I can also say that if you ever choose to do an audiobook, you doing it by yourself sounds pretty good.
I have a friend in Newfoundland who's legally blind, and she's excited I wrote the book, but she really wants me to do an audiobook because then she can enjoy it herself. She's she said, I expect my sister will kind of fill me in on it.
Yeah.
But she said, because you know, Alan Doyle, he did the audio for his last two books. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'm not Alan Doyle.
Touche. But at the same time, I also feel like nobody can tell their story better than the artist.
True. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just listened to Matthew McConaughey's book.
All right.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just so nice to hear his story in his voice. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Well, it sounded fantastic. I am even more excited to get my own book. Do you ship them out?
No, they're shipped out by Amazon. Okay. Actually, it's what they call print on demand technology.
Oh, so you buy the book, they print it, they get it all together, and they ship it to you.
Exactly.
Wicked, just like my merch.
Oh, is that how it works?
Shameless plug. Yep.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, my merch is the exact same way. You look at a catalog, you choose what picture, what kind of color shirt you want, or what pattern you want on it, where you want the logo, and boom, it gets sent to you.
I think that's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it is a big money saver.
Yeah, that's why I chose Amazon, because as my daughter said to me, Mom, you don't want boxes of books in your cupboard, like, because you're just guessing mm-hmm. how many might ever get sold.
Yep.
So you've got them here, you've got all that money laid out, because I've got to pay the publisher, of course, mm-hmm. and then they're there. Well, then even if they do sell, you have the expense of shipping them.
Yeah.
And whereas if people have Amazon Prime, they get free shipping.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you don't have Amazon Prime, you'll have to pay whatever their shipping rate is. But
if you don't have Amazon Prime, find a friend with Amazon Prime.
Exactly. And that's what one of my friends in the village did. I knew she mm-hmm. wasn't real techie. So I was expecting a few of those friends to say, well, couldn't I just get it from you, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I did order about 35 books myself for that reason, because I knew there'd be people who just wouldn't go online and do it. But locally, I'm not shipping them out to people. But anyway, she she said to me, oh, no, I got it. She said, my daughter's boyfriend has Amazon Prime. And so he went on and got it for her.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. But what I did do, we have a local store. It's called the Village Store. It's a little grocery store here in Athens. And they support local artists. And they have, I think at any one time, they have 3 or 4 artist books in their store.
Oh, that's awesome. And
yeah, so somebody said to me, well, you should put a few in there, especially when we were getting so close to Christmas, because people might not have time to order them and get them in. Whereas if they're right there, they might pick one up for somebody.
Yeah.
So I've sold about 12 there.
Awesome.
And I'm debating whether to put some more in or not. I don't really make any money by putting them there, or any more money. I mean, I get paid by Amazon, of course, but there's no markup on them is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So we'll just see. We'll see how the demand goes, you know, because I sold like 7 or 8 and then she phoned and said, oh, they're all gone. Bring me some more. And, or we've got people that are looking, they're coming back tomorrow because they want them for a Christmas present. Mm-hmm. So we did that. They've been very supportive.
I'm just super excited to read all the stories. Like I've been long ever since we met each other at the 10-year extravaganza. I've been following you and just the concept of all the stories from past and present. It's just like, oh, it's so incredible. The detail and depths. It's going back to my childhood almost.
Well, exactly. And talking about going back to a childhood, one of my friends who is a Scrabble friend, I played Scrabble with her for 28 years, but she's more my mother's age. Anyway, she bought the book and like, she's not a country music fan. I've never, all the years we've been together and all the years that she's heard my stories, you know, she's never said anything about liking country music. She just likes my stories. Well, anyway, she bought the book and I was just like, oh dear, like this pretty big book for somebody who's not really into Canadian country music.
Yeah.
She sent me an email. She said, I cannot turn the light out. She said, I'm so engrossed in this book and it's brought back so many memories. And so I phoned her and I said, well, what memories? Well, she said they were raised in Nova Scotia. They had no television. The radio in the kitchen played country music all the time. They got Wheeling West Virginia Jamboree or whatever it was called on the radio. And she said, I mentioned the song Rattler in the book. And she said, her dad and her brother were obsessed with that song. And so after reading about it in the book, she pulled it up on YouTube and watched a YouTube video of the song Rattler.
Oh.
I was blown away, Tim.
No doubt.
I'm like, you just don't know. I mean, I've known this woman all those years and I never heard those stories from her until she read my book and the memories came back.
That right there just made an epiphany to me. Your book is what a song is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it is, isn't it? I never thought of that. But country music is storytelling.
Fair enough. Yeah. Wow. Whew.
I have another girlfriend, like a closer girlfriend, who was on some of the adventures with me. And so anyway, and I autographed it, you know, to thanks for joining me on some of my adventures. Anyway, she phoned me and she said, I just finished it. And before I sit up out of my chair, I have to call you and tell you how thoroughly I enjoyed it. She said, I could hardly put it down. And she was telling her daughter about it. And so her daughter went and bought her own copy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then she said, I've been telling all my friends and I'm going to just keep promoting this book because I know they're all going to just love it. And then of course there were pictures. There's a couple pictures of her in there and anybody likes to see their picture in a book, right?
Oh, of course. Oh, well, Mary Ray, we're down to the last question.
Okay, what's your last question?
So for new fans who are finding you for the very first time or have been listening into the stories from the book and want to know where they can find it, where can they find you online?
Well, I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Godmother of Canadian Country Music. But I do have a website that is www.godmotherofcanadiancountrymusic.ca. They can hear the interviews there. They can see photos of me with stars. They can see concert photos that were taken professionally. And there's a little spot there for the book where they can click on book, and there's a link right to Amazon that they can buy the book right off that webpage.
That is fantastic. Well, Mary Rae, Godmother, I cannot wait to get my hands on this novel. From when we met at Soundcheck's 10-year extravaganza, I felt the energy and the positivity you brought, and you have a true knack for taking an interview and turning it into a conversation between longtime friends. It's something I strive for each and every time I'm sitting behind this microphone.
I felt like I was talking to a longtime friend today, so I think you certainly hit the nail on the head with our interview anyway.
Thank you very, very much. And thank you so much for coming on today. I can't wait to see you again, hopefully soon rather than later.
Yes. Well, I'm hoping to be at Half Green Acres this summer a couple of times anyway. I should be able to get to that, even if some of the other ones are canceled, because it's pretty outdoor. But anyway, we shall see what happens.
I'm not going to take away from somebody's thunder, because I don't want to announce something before somebody else has something to announce. But there might be an opportunity for me to be back at Happy Green Acres this year. So,
okay.
And we this time, I think I'm coming down with full band.
Oh, that'd be nice. Mm-hmm. Although you were wonderful even without your own full band. It was great. You. Yeah. Well, we're going, supposedly, if it all happens, to the Country in the Bay up in Thunder Bay this summer.
Perfect. Do you need a tent to stay in my backyard? It's big enough.
Oh, well, there you go. We've got a motel room booked, but I probably would like to get together with you at some point if we actually get up there.
Well, there might be an opportunity there, too, because that's the show that I'm really hoping is still going on, because I'm penciled in for.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. I hope so, too.
Fingers crossed.
For everybody. Yeah, I hope for everybody's sake.
Yeah, It would just be amazing to have that atmosphere back, and especially in my hometown. It's been a long time since we've had that feeling here. So,
yeah.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Mary Rae.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, everyone. My amazing interview with Mary Rae Knapp, the godmother of Canadian country music. As stated, you can reach her on all her social media platforms at The Godmother of Canadian Country Music. Next episode, I have the lovely and talented Nicole Rae. We're taking it back to yesterday on the next episode. My name is Tim Albertson. You can check out my music at www.timalbertsonmusic.ca. Also, make sure to follow us up on Facebook by searching the Canadian Country Music Podcast, or follow and subscribe to our YouTube page where you can check out the videos of the interviews, as well as YouTube exclusive questions not found on this podcast. Also, watch the premiere of the videos, because we also bring the artists into the live chat room just for you guys to sit there and chit chat with them. Just search the Canadian Country Music Podcast on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, and follow us up. If you're an artist and you have some insight you want to share about your experiences, please email us at theccmcast@gmail.com. Until next time, everyone, remember that love is always free, and I will see you next time on the Canadian Country Music Podcast.